joining us now on the HRNP guest line, John Morosi of MLB Network, Fox Sports Radio. You see him all over the place, MLB Network Radio as well. John, opening day, less than a week away. We're in the month where baseball is meant to be played. Houston Astros, defending AL champions, have been to five straight ALCSs, three of the last five World Series. What do you think the state of the Astros are entering the 2022 season?
Well, Joel and Jeremy, good afternoon. Happy April. It's a great time of year, certainly. And I think the Astros have to feel pretty good about themselves. I realize that you lost a franchise player in Carlos Correa, but there's also a lot of enthusiasm about what Jeremy Peña can bring in shortstop. I would expect that we'll see a better version of Alex Bregman this year than what we saw at the end of last year with the injury that he had to have surgically repaired. I think Brantley, we've seen from spring training, is still Brantley. His ability to make great contact is always there. And Kyle Tucker, I think, is an ascending all-star player. And you look at the rotation, and I think overall the pitching doesn't quite have the amount of left-handers that I'd want necessarily to have balance. But the lefties they've got, both in the bullpen and in the rotation with Framber, are very good. And then, of course, you're expecting still big things from Verlander, Odorizzi to bounce back and have a really impactful year. Luis Garcia, certainly a tremendous year last year for him. So I think overall, it's still one of the most balanced teams that we see in the American League, and they've got a very good chance to defend that title once again.
John, you're obviously in the know, and we follow you for information and you know, breaking news as well, but I'm curious on two fronts. One, what do you make of the McCullers situation? Because this is something lingering from the playoffs last year that we've been told time and time again was going to heal itself and go away, and yet here we are facing him not being in the rotation to start the season, and we don't know when he's coming back. And then twofold, secondly, what are you hearing about if the Astros are going to be willing to spend money between now and the trade deadline, even if it isn't at the start of the season, to try to make up for what they let get away with Carlos Correa when they still have so much money to spend?
Well, that's a great question, and certainly there is an allocation with this team's payroll where you would have expected an extension for Correa to be, and it's not. So that means they can either be more aggressive, perhaps, at the trade deadline or maybe even next offseason. If you almost think about next offseason as starting at the deadline, if you want to be really aggressive in making a play for someone, you can certainly do it that way, and that to me is one approach they can take where maybe you take on a contract in July of this year as if it's the early part of your shopping for next season, while it's already given you a portion of time to see what Jeremy Peña offers you. I really think that there's a pretty strong belief in the industry that he is a legitimate starting shortstop in the major leagues, and it's going to give you a half season's worth of observations and ability to make that decision about what he's going to be able to offer you. I'm similarly concerned about what you got there with the situation with McCullers. Obviously, we expected last year at the postseason time that he'd be well and pitching again by now, but he's not. And you look at the big picture here, too. You've got Verlander who can opt out. You've got Brantley in the last year of his deal. Presley's in the last year of his deal. Gurriel's in the last year of his deal. So there are certainly some holes that are going to happen on this team in the next few years and really in the next 6-7 months. That you have to be aware of. And so you start to wonder, do you make a different approach with respect to the bullpen if you have to layer in and get a little bit more experience back there? All those questions I think are very fair. You know, bullpen is one area of your club that you can often get some additional help at the deadline. The Astros have taken that approach before. But they're certainly going to miss people like Yimi Garcia, who I think really was an underrated, excellent pitcher for them last season. I think missing him is one of those parts that we don't talk about enough that I think is really going to be one aspect of this club that they're going to miss. And I think Raley fits that category as well. So they've certainly lost some experience back there. And when you combine that with McCullers' absence, it's going to make more, I think, of a pressure on someone like a Christian Javier to give them bulk either as a starter or a reliever. Odorizzi has to really step up. Verlander has to be more like the Verlander of old. And I think if all those things click, or if even the majority of them click, they still have a chance to make the playoffs and make it to the ALCS yet again.
I'm going to miss Daily Raley more than anybody. John Morosi of MLB Network is joining us. Click kind of being the key word there, because some people in this city a little unhappy with James Click. We mentioned the money, you know, $30 million or so under the competitive balance tax, letting Correa go for a contract that looked team-friendly, looked like it'd be one the Houston Astros would want to pick up. You brought up all the questions the Astros have over the next couple of years. Is James Click the right guy for the job?
He is. I mean, I think that you look at his pedigree and what he's done with the Tampa Bay Rays prior to coming to Houston, and certainly the success they've had the last couple of years since he stepped in. Obviously, he took over under very difficult circumstances, and sure that was still Jeff Luhnow and A.J. Hinch's team based on the construction of it, but it's become more and more his team, and obviously there are some questions about the decision to let Correa go, and sort of that really comes down to ownership on a lot of different levels. The Rays, and I think in James's background, they were not a team and still are not a team that does a lot of long-term extensions with players or plays huge in the free agent pool. So I think it's a little bit of a different approach for James, and I think we'll see. I certainly understand the reaction of fans that losing Correa is a significant blow, and it is. There's no question about it. I thought that the Astros probably could have matched what he got from Minnesota or even surpassed it. So I'm surprised by that measure. But you look at it in general, and it's hard to argue with a couple ALCS appearances and a pennant, obviously, last year and finishing two wins shy of a World Series title. So I would say it's a fairer thing for us to probably judge James after this upcoming trade deadline or maybe even the full season when you've had a little bit more time. Certainly a lot of the players that he's got now, he inherited. There's no question about that. But I also think as you get through the next deadline and into the second half, we'll see a bit more of what Jeremy Pena does. I mean, I really think in a lot of ways how Pena performs is probably going to be one of the fairest metrics by which you judge James Click's performance, because it's not just that he let Correa go and he signed elsewhere, but there were a lot of other shortstops available that he did not sign, and Trevor Story being one of them. And that has to be part of his thought process of how confident he is in Jeremy Pena, and I think that really speaks to what he believes the future should be for this organization.
John, what do you make of Brian Cashman and the article that came out and his comments? Because obviously, you know, it got the ire of Astros fans, and the fact that it got, to me, I said on air, I think he was just covering his own butt because he knows that everybody's looking at him as to trying to get the reasons as to why they haven't made a World Series since 2009. But to go back and kind of reopen that wound and the way he went about it and the way he termed it really got under the skin of a lot of Astros fans, and I'm sure it reached the clubhouse as well. What was your take on all that?
I honestly did not have a problem with it because he was answering the question. I don't think that was Brian trying to get a story out there and call up a reporter and create a story where there wasn't one. I think he was asked about the drought, and I think he said correctly, listen, we lost in the 2017 ALCS to a team that was found to be cheating, and that's all a matter of public record. I mean, we could interpret it as an excuse, an explanation. I suppose that's all in the eye of the beholder, but as a journalist, and we all work in broadcasting, when we ask a question, we really appreciate the honest answer. And I think it speaks to Brian's competitiveness that 5 years later, it still angers him. And there's probably people in that clubhouse who it still angers. And the Astros, at the end of the day, have to feel good or at least at peace with how that championship was won. And you have your ring and you move on from it. And I think that to me is a part of history. It's documented. It doesn't have to be all good or all bad. It's just it is. History to be documented and appreciated and understood from different angles. And there's probably one way that it's viewed in Houston and one way that it's viewed in New York. And that's okay. That's a different personality and different perspective on things. And I've got no issue whatsoever with it. I'm certainly am someone that believes that if we're going to ask questions of people about their record, and if they want to defend a part of it and say, listen, we lost to a team that was cheating, that's a fair statement to make on his own behalf, and I don't begrudge Brian Cashman at all for saying that.
All right, and we don't have you for that long, but we obviously uncovered the numbers. They didn't hit when they could have, when the cheating wasn't going on. But you mentioned it because of the fact that it factors into his record. What do you expect to come out of this letter that's going to be unsealed? Because a lot of people turned to that too and said before there was an Astros cheating scandal, there was the Red Sox, there were the Yankees, and there was an Apple Watch amongst other things. What should fans expect from what that letter might contain?
Well, it's impossible to know and speculate on, but as you point out, there were different allegations back and forth between Boston and New York that were going on around the same time as what happened with the Astros. I think that it's important to understand this, that there is a scale of whatever offenses would have occurred, and I think it's important for us all to keep into context and understanding what the penalties were, what the investigations brought forward, and what ultimately discipline came from MLB. One assumes that the contents of this letter either were already known to MLB or will be known to MLB once they become public. And it's hard to know and sort of have the same standard of MLB as some court of law, if you will. But they do have the ability to investigate different things that are brought to them. And they clearly, in the case of the Astros, found it serious enough that they had some very significant penalties. And we have to now see what becomes of this, if anything, from the standpoint of the actual penalties that are enforced to the New York Yankees, if in fact there are allegations that are brought forth and substantiated and investigated. These are all things that I think MLB has done, whether it was performance-enhancing drugs or this situation. They have been accountable, I think, to their own membership and the people who follow the game to investigate things that are brought to their attention. And obviously, as we know, the Astros were victims of the scouting information database subterfuge that went on with respect to a former Cardinals employee. And I think all of these offenses exist. And I think it's important to sort of consider them all in the context in which they occurred, the effect that it has on wins and losses. Ultimately, it's up to each individual fan or observer to decide what is egregious and what is a milder offense. And I think ultimately the arbiter or the people that have the most information on this would be Major League Baseball itself. So I will certainly read with interest if and when the contents come out, and then I will look with a lot of interest on how MLB handles any sort of allegations going forward.
John, great stuff. Thanks, as always. John, we really appreciate the time. Look forward to catching up again down the road.
Sounds great. Happy opening day. I've always made it a habit of getting to Houston a bunch in the month of October in particular, so it would not surprise me at all if I see you guys in that great city again here this fall.
Very good. Look forward to it. John Morosi of MLB Network stopping by.